You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks, his website RickAckerman.com. He's speaking to us from
sunny Florida.
Rick,
nice to be on board. And let me just mention to your listeners Jim does a pretty good James Bond imitation with Sean Connery.
Well, it's very nice of you to say that, Ricky.
That's pretty good. I'm wondering which other characters you do, but in time, I'm sure they'll all come out.
Well, wait until St. Patrick's Day.
Okay.
it helps if you go visit the places. We have relatives in Athlone, Ireland, which is in the dead center of the island, and it's a perfect place to tour from because nothing's more than 2.5 hours away.
Huh. It's almost like Israel.
Oh, my God, Israel. A 90-minute drive across and a 3-hour drive north-south?
Right. It's like being in New Jersey. New Jersey north-south's a little bit bigger, but I think I've heard Israel it's similar to New Jersey in size.
Or as we'd call it in Canada or U.S., a provincial or state park.
Yeah, right. What they call a lake I went to summer camp. We had what I thought was a big lake, but it was really called Paddy's Pond by Maine standards.
Tariffs and the U.S. economy. What is the state of the U.S. economy right now?
It's interesting. I wrote a couple times on what are these idiots who put everybody else's money, they throw everybody's hard-earned money at the market. Do they not care about tariffs? Because in the 1920s, I've seen graphs that literally track the news on the Smoot-Hawley tariff. And if the Smoot-Hawley seemed to be losing favor, the market would rally. The market was exquisitely sensitized to talk about tariffs. This time around, like, the market didn't give a care, you know, it didn't give a hoot, and initially. And so, and Trump's tariffs, the things that he was threatening, were much more severe than anything that Smoot-Hawley contemplated. So here was the market remaining oblivious, and it's clear in retrospect that everyone thought Trump was bluffing. And that question still, it remains. So now we're sort of splitting hairs. It's almost like Fed watching, trying to discern movement in the back of Trump's mind on Trump. Is he really just kind of playing the game? And I guess, well, the market it's really affected by its perceptions of whether Trump is bluffing or not. But the last few days, I guess the market has said no, he's not bluffing. So, but I don't see how he could not be bluffing, because the tariffs will wreak hell on the economy. It's going to put a lot of people out of work, especially in the automotive sector. And I just don't see how Trump can be on board for heavy tariffs, especially with the retaliation we're getting from our trading partners. So, but at best, it's added quite a bit of uncertainty to the markets, and that's why, on balance, the down days are a lot worse now than the up days. In fact, holy smokes, I'm looking and I've been shorting into the rallies, and this one we came down pretty hard. It's like the market is making its attempt to rally at the time of day when the sleazeballs who control the markets are best able to make it happen. Namely, you know, they get a little rally going overnight simply by taking away the offers. They are alleviating supply. And so the market rallies overnight on no volume. But then we get to see the real world when things open during the day. So we're still... I'd rather be selling the rallies, shorting the rallies here, than buying the dips.
Gold, is it still a good purchase right now, or is it needed more than ever?
Well, I'm still on a 3,040 target for the, this would be COMEX April gold, and we've been no higher than, I think, 2,999 something. So we didn't quite get there, and that in itself is bearish. It could be bearish, but I still have it one upside target. It's a pretty important target, a major one, and if it marks a top in gold, it's going to tell us that gold is going to come down with the rest of the market in a bear market. So that's the way it looks.
You feel with the layoffs in the federal workforce, real estate in the Washington, D.C. area is going to take a big hit.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. And, you know, when you look at cities that have collapsed, Detroit, for one, Chicago is well into collapse, meaning there are certain neighborhoods in Chicago where even if you call in a homicide, you don't get a police response. It's that bad. But we've never seen as precipitous a deflation as we're going to see in Washington, D.C., because, as we all know, some of the most expensive suburbs in the country lie just beyond the city limits of Washington. And the feeder stream, all the money that supports high real estate prices in the D.C. suburbs, comes from jobs that are being lost to Doge. And, you know, if the happy spinmeisters are out there saying, you know, they'll just find work elsewhere, but the very obvious fact is they won't. You know, the jobs that they're doing in Washington are jobs that the corporate sector already eliminated 15 years ago. The government's a little bit slow getting around to things like that, meaning they never get around to it, but we're getting around to it now. And they're unusual. You know, these are high paying jobs for people who do nothing and can't find, there's no comparable job in the private sector. There may be one job per, you know, one equivalent job in the private sector, but, you know, the Doge layoffs have eliminated 10 layers of that same job. So things are going to go hard on Washington, D.C., very hard. And I think just the regional letdown there is enough to trip the U.S. economy into recession. I think we're right there because the last couple months, consumers have been cutting back. And I think it's not just a little cyclical, it's not a blip or, let's say, a little bit of downside for a couple months. I think we're already in a recession spiral, or we've just begun one. So that's another reason to think that the market's seen its all-time highs.
When you have a government run by billionaires, do you think they're in touch with what's happening in the real economy?
It's not run by billionaires. You know, they not even remotely. You know, the left, the progressives, are going at it so hard that Wired, which is, you know, Wired is a pretty good it's very good coverage of the technological world, but they're blithering idiots on the political side. The Wired is all Trump derangement syndrome, and they're all they're talking about how much Musk is paying some of his guys, you know, the wrecking crew that he's got out there, but they're really good guys. They're out there finding stories of waste that sort of put everyone behind the effort to cut back on the federal government, to cut out waste and fraud and everything else. So anyway, it's not billionaires, but Musk is just reporting to Trump, and I'm sure they talk a lot about, well, this needs to be chopped and that needs to be chopped. But don't kid yourself. They constitute an investigative force. And with what they've turned up so far, no one should question the value of Musk's squad of assassins.
Now, people in the automotive industry very concerned about the tariffs because it's so integrated. It's been integrated since 1965. And even if you had cars just built in the U.S., it's only 20% of the world's market. Is it viable for the U.S. to try to stand all alone when it comes to cars?
We don't. We can't. We're not even trying, I don't think, because we get so much of our, the parts supply is Canada and Mexico and sometimes Japan. But, you know, Trump's, the long-term viability of what Trump is doing is unquestionable. You know, he's talking about bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., but you can see the costs are very high and tariffs are part of that plan, and it would work eventually. The question is whether we're going to bring those jobs back and get the economy in rip-roaring health before the inevitable recession terminates the effort. You know, and at the outset, you would have said, you know, if America wants to bring back manufacturing, it's going to, there'll be costs. It's going to be painful. Well, that's exactly what we're experiencing. It's the pain, but it's also, it has the danger, very high risk of killing the economy before all the benefits are, even on the horizon. So we're in, I think, a difficult position. And, you know, I've been so bearish for so long. I do qualify as a true perma bear. And, but in this instance, you know, we're going to see, I think we're definitely going to get a recession. We're past the point where we're going to get out of this with just a recession. Things are so pumped, really, that the implosion, if it's equal or at least equal to the mania that's pumped all assets, asset prices, especially real estate, it's going to be, there's no way we can skate past this. And, you know, I see there's some, you can make a really bullish case for Trump that he's, there's one particular set of changes that he's implemented or that he has planned. The press is too stupid and lazy to even write about it, much less understand it, because it would ascribe a certain financial genius to Trump. But and I don't know whether he talked about this before, but Trump wants to remonetize gold. He wants to take the biggest asset base to essentially refinance our debt using home equity. And it's a very interesting plan where every homeowner would get essentially a very, very long-term bond. And the interest over time would, the federal government could essentially, they're doing a refi and using home equity to recapitalize the U.S., but they would give you a long-term bond that would help sustain real estate values. And it's a terrific plan. And he's also, the remonetization of gold would take America's gold stock and extract some value from it, so that the U.S. would have the value of its stored gold. I can't remember how many hundreds of tons it is, but it would take that gold. And when you price gold, I think above $5,000 an ounce, the gold becomes a significant piece of this recapitalization effort. It's there's enough of it so that we could, oh, for instance, and for one, pay down, handle the student debt problem, which is, it aggregates to something like $1.8 trillion. So we could handle that. And, so the press doesn't talk about it. They're so busy taking pot shots, at some of the things they do understand. They take sort of a fourth grader approach toward Trump, orange man bad because of this and that, but none of them really understand what he's trying to do. And even if they did, they would hate to put it out there to make Trump look somehow, wise and prudent.
We'll have more with Rick Ackerman right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Rick Ackerman. Rick, what about commodities like copper? How are they going to do?
Well, copper is never going to fare well in a global recession, to put it mildly. But there are it's a difficult commodity to handicap because technological or uses of copper for technological purposes have grown. Let me take a look at copper here, and we've made a recent top at $5.20 a pound. That's basis the May COMEX contract, and it's come down pretty hard since then. And I think, even though there's nothing decisive on the chart, there's a reasonably compelling case to make that copper has made its top. So we're coming down from 520 a pound, and we're currently trading 480 on that May contract. But before this thing corrects, we could get down to $4 or even lower. So we may have seen a blow off in copper.
Utilities, are they a good bet?
They're a relatively safe bet because the regulators have no choice but to allow the utilities a small profit, at least, so they're always going to have they're always going to have revenues that cover their costs, and of course, some of them have enough left over to offer dividends. So, yeah, a good utility stock will be a good bet, but you know, you don't have if you want the additional kicker, and I did an interview. I used to do a column for the San Francisco Examiner, and maybe one of the only bullish columns I ever featured was the story of my barber, Louis Pirro. And he had begun investing when after World War II, he started investing in something he decided was just a good bet. It was utility companies with a good dividend track record, uninterrupted dividends in areas that were growing. I mean, he sort of drove the decision down to power companies that were operating in the state of Nevada. And I don't have to tell you how Las Vegas has grown Nevada and its power needs. So Louis was right on top of it was a perfect investment over a period of 20 or 30 years. And he took every penny of growth in his stocks, and he reinvested it. All the dividends went back. And of course, when he was initially doing this, his barber income only allowed him to save about $5 a week. But by the time I was getting haircuts from Louis, this was in Mountain View, before Google showed up, he'd be talking to his the other barber there, and he's and Hank would say, well, what do you got planned for the weekend? And Louis would say, well, I'm going down to Cabo to do some marlin fishing, or I'm going to go to Vegas or Atlantic City. And it wasn't typical barber talk. And eventually, you know, I said, Louis, you seem to live a pretty good life. And he told me that story about just sticking with Nevada utilities and never wavering. But there was an epilogue, because he put quite a bit of his money. By that time, he was invested in San Jose real estate and some other things, and he had an enormous position in Nokia stock. Hank made a ton because, being a barber, he saw the impact. He anticipated the impact of minoxidil, of something that would grow hair on men, and its implications for the bottom line at Johnson & Johnson, which made the product. So Hank went all in with hair growth and made a ton of money too. But Louis, at the time, he had such huge exposure, and this was around 1998. It was just ahead of the dot-com crash, and the dot-coms did crash, and Louis, he would have lost it all except for the fact that the Silicon Valley real estate that he had you know, he basically diversified, that saved him. So good story, really, about a guy who had $5 a week to put aside, and he eventually became a multimillionaire barber.
Anything else we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
Well, talk to your barber, really. See what he's doing. It's not the shoeshine boy. What we should be doing is definitely looking for safety here. And, of course, that means bonds. And there's so many, the cross currents are so violent, though, that you can't just make it an easy story. There's risk everywhere right now. And I would say never mind growing your money, just protecting your nest egg is what's important. And you should be willing to accept a lower return for that safety.
Rick, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim. I appreciate the chance to connect with your guys.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. If you have any questions for Rick or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. You can find us on X at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.